16 minutes before 5 o'clock here on Downtown. It's time for this week's Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company at 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan in the house.
Yes.
With two bottles of wine today.
My bottles of wine. Yeah, we're going to, as I mentioned last week, I was inspired I do all my thinking in the shower, which is why I don't think that much. I guess there's the lesson there. But as I was standing in a nice warm shower on probably a very cold morning, I was thinking to myself, you know, we're getting into a time when a lot of the major religions are celebrating religiosity. And it got me to thinking, we touch on most areas of the world as I do sort of the, you know, the second half of the year world tour. But there's certainly some places that make wine that we don't really talk about that much yet. And a lot of the reason for that, frankly, is that those wines aren't deeply available to us yet. So I can't really bring on any good example wines. And subsequently, I probably haven't had that many of these wines, and I don't have that depth of knowledge. China, for one, is one big glaring issue that we don't talk about much, even though there's a lot of viticulture there. And I have actually had some Chinese wine, and they're coming along, but it's probably going to be a little while before that culture is open up to us enough that I can talk about it. But one of the cultures that is available and open to us and obviously a big part of our lives is the culture of the viticulture of the Mediterranean, the Holy Land, essentially. It is obviously, I mean, we talk about all these wonderful vineyard sites on opposite sides of the Mediterranean, but we don't talk about that cradle of civilization, which, you know, I have a quote here. So essentially, no one really knows where wine was first made, but it's generally agreed that it was somewhere in the Middle East, right? Near where we're talking about. Again, no one knows for sure. But as Jancis Robinson, who's a very wonderful wine writer and master of wine, put it, there may be dispute about where wine was originally made, but no doubt that the Middle East is the birthplace of the culture of drinking wine. And certainly a lot of important wine regions in that part of the world. But of course, what has happened in that part of the world, as has happened in a lot of the other wine regions that we've talked about, except it's kind of continued into modern times, is constant war. And that's played a big part in the history, especially of one of the wines we'll be drinking today. We'll talk a little bit about that. But I wanted to kind of touch on the area.
And the war doesn't help the wine.
The war does not help the wine, but does it hurt the wine? Is going to be a sort of an interesting philosophical discussion because.
So then, yeah. What is it good for?
Ah, touche. I hate it when people pull stuff like that, and I've no good comeback.
Absolutely nothing.
How? Good God. First, before we get into where our wines, both of them today, are from Lebanon, and we'll talk about Lebanon. The first place I'd actually like to talk about that, again, I haven't touched on much, is Cyprus. No one ever really thinks of Cyprus as producing great wine these days, and there's a good reason for that. But originally, in the Middle Ages, they were regarded as making the best sweet wine in the world. And they still make, essentially, the current current iteration of it, which is called Commandaria. But yeah, there's evidence of wine production in Cyprus dating back to 3500 BC, so obviously a very long time. And what's very interesting about Cyprus, it was never invaded by phylloxera. And indeed, there is actually currently a strict quarantine on the island for what can be planted there. And subsequently, there's still a lot of indigenous varietals, including the grape Mavro, which is not really good for much except bulk wines or production of this sweet wine that we were talking about. Mavro just means dark. It's good for high yields, essentially. There's also Zinisteri, which is a nicer red wine and is making some very interesting wines, especially on the western side of Cyprus. But those two grapes together are raisined, much like the wines that they make Amarone or things like that from, and made into this sweet wine. And what's amazing about this wine is that it can have up to four times the amount of sugar as port, which is just hard to get your palate around because it makes my teeth hurt thinking about it, because port itself is very, very sweet. But it's kind of interesting. And again, that level of sweetness, that level of sugar made it almost a fortified wine, right? Which means it could travel everywhere, which is why during a time like the Middle Ages, when you might recall they had no rich refrigeration per se, why it made it to all these corners of Europe and was so widely regarded, because everybody likes sweet wines, especially when they're not spoiled, and they're probably not spoiled if they're sweet. So there you go. So Cyprus, yeah, just kind of interesting. I wanted to throw that in because no one really thinks about it, but it's there, and it produces a lot of wine. And now, much as some other parts of the world that we've talked about, you're starting to see some wines maybe getting out of there and getting into other markets. So we'll see if anything from Cyprus invades Maine. One of the other important places in the Holy Land is Israel. And again, this is not a political show, but we're going to be talking about Israel and Lebanon, and you may be aware that there's been some strife. Although the interesting thing is we're going to talk about strife in Lebanon, and that was a Lebanese civil war, and that actually played big into the Chateau Mussar that we're going to be talking about. So Israel, obviously very well known for what? Kosher wines. Are they known for other wines? Well, they're starting to get known for wines that are good in their own right and not simply desirable because they're kosher. But there's been certainly a recent uptick in viticulture. There are currently 5,500 hectares under vine, so that's about a little over 13,000 acres under vine. Exports the most of the whole region, again, basically due to the world's need for kosher wines. For years, most of the wine that was coming out of Israel was bulk sort of sweet red wine for the kiddush, which is the blessing over the wine that at many of the Jewish ceremonies. But now there's been plantings on a more serious nature and in higher altitude areas. And we've talked a lot about, you know, the Andes Mountains and other high altitude areas being better because it strains the vines a little bit more. It's cooler up there and better wine varietals like that. So in the 1970s, they started to plant on the Golan Heights and other high altitude places. And now you get a really serious focus on good dry red and some white wines rather than just, well, hey, it's kosher and you're looking for something for Passover, so this is all I've got. So you see a lot of Cab and Shiraz and Merlot, Chard, Sauvignon, so popular international varietals that are gaining steam. Not a lot of interest in New World style wines. Most of them tend to follow sort of a French aesthetic, Bordelaise and things like that. But really some good wines. If anybody, unfortunately they're not in Maine, but if anybody ever finds the wines of the Castel, Castel winery from Israel, it's they're some of the best wines I've ever had, period. Not just they do happen to be kosher, but it really doesn't matter. They're just absolutely phenomenal wines. So check those out. Now the wines that we're drinking today. So I do have two wines, and these are both from Lebanon. So we'll talk a little bit about Lebanon and the wines today. So one of the wines today is the wine that people tend to think about when they think about fine wines, not just from Lebanon, but from this entire region. And that is Chateau Mussar, M-U-S-A-R. Very, very well-regarded, well-respected winery that I'll talk a little bit about. And then the next wine is from the Ixir Winery, which is an example of the sort of new investment in the area, investment from actually outside the area. A Bordelaise winemaker and a Rioja winemaker are the folks behind that. So interesting new interest in this area because, again, fantastic, almost too ideal for grapes. It is... So Mussar. So let's talk about Chateau Mussar. Chateau Mussar and a lot of these other wineries, they've never even termed themselves organic because they've never needed to be organic. They are organic, but it's so dry and no bugs, no nothing like that. It is just unbelievably ideal place to grow grapes. And it's dry, you're not having any fungal problems or anything like that, so they don't need chemical intervention, and it's just great. So they've been organic forever. Mussar. Mussar was founded in 1930 by a guy named Gaston Hochar. Gaston was a serviceable winemaker. He liked Bordeaux, and he tried to do his thing. But then, essentially, he had a son, Serge, who wanted to be an engineer, but ended up going to enology school. And when he got out, he went to his dad and he said, I want to make the wine my way. I want it to be known worldwide, and I want you to quit. That's a pretty ballsy thing to say to your dad.
Yeah.
But his dad had the inkling and said, all right, son, you take over. It was a good choice. It was a good choice. He spent years, Serge did, perfecting, 18 years perfecting the formula for the wine that we're going to try today, the Mussar Red, and was chosen as Decanter's very first man of the year in 1984 for his dedication. And what was he dedicated to? He was dedicated to making amazing wines at a very, very difficult time. 1975 to 1990 was a massive civil war in Lebanon. Essentially what happened was before then, for a long time, essentially a Christian-based government was in place to a predominantly Muslim population. The West supported the government, and the Palestinian Liberation Organization and others appeared and overthrew the government, essentially. And in the midst of that, Serge kept making wine. There are stories of him sitting in his cellar with bombs falling outside and him just nurturing his wines and making sure that nothing happened. Mm. It's just insane. Like, I can't imagine just carrying on for years and years and years, 15 years. And on the other side of it, he emerged as one of the most important winemakers in the world. And subsequently, he passed away in 2014. His son took over operations about 10 years ago. His son, who was named after the grandfather, Gaston, and has continued the not only the quality winemaking, but also sort of new vital stuff. And then the Ixir is an example of kind of new, interesting, dry farming, dark stuff. We're running out of time, so I'm wrapping it up. But anyway, the Mussar we're drinking is 1994, and it's from a leaker bottle. And it is still fresh and vital and wonderful. And here, I can pass this around if you guys want to try it. Yeah. And then the new one is a perfect example of why people are investing there. It has every bit as much potential to be as vital, you know, 20 years down the line.
That is so good.
But anyway, I did want to remind people we have a tasting coming up on Thursday. We had a great one, the Women in Wine event last week. But this week we have our annual Ugly Sweater tasting, so come on out, wear your holiday finest, as it were, and we're going to drink some really good wine and have a good time. So that's Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m., and we are open from 9 to 8 o'clock on Saturday and from 9 to 6 p.m. on Sunday, and then we're getting out for the holiday, and we'll be back on Tuesday. But we hope to see all of you in the shop. We'll sell you some good wine, maybe from Lebanon, maybe from somewhere else. But we'll take care of you.
Excellent.
Thanks, Happy Eric. Holidays, everybody.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you and the family. It's time to wrap up hour one of Downtown here. Message in the Bottle brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company.